listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, man, and off we go. What a sports weekend in Las Vegas. Wilder Fury, we got NASCAR tomorrow. Golden Knights win big. UNLV knocks off San Diego State. Oh, by the way, we're only 21 days from that thing called Selection Sunday. You know, March Madness, the big dance, bracketology, one and done, survive in advance, Cinderella time. You get the picture. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. For 15 minutes, could save you 15% or more on car insurance. So go to geico.com for a free rate quote. Big show tonight. We're going to start to unpack the 64-team tournament that will transfix the nation for 19 days. And frankly, I think it's terrific. Look, I've said many times, sports, it's the greatest reality show going, and you can script everything but the ending. And the beauty of the tournament, the beauty of the March Madness tournament, you can't fake it. You got to win six in a row. And in the end, like no other thing in life, it's a do-or-die contest six times in a row. It reveals the character and virtue it takes to be a champion. That's why I love sports so much. So tonight we're going to take a deep dive into what I would call the candidates who might have the best shot to cut down the nets. And in a minute, we're going to be joined by a man. He's a walking encyclopedia for college basketball. And, yes, you know him. He's Aaron Torres, so please take your seats and pay full attention. By the way, at the bottom of the hour, we are going to take you out here live to Vegas. My man T.C. Martin was ringside for the Wilder Fury fight. And don't forget, at the end of the show, you know him, you love him, can't live without him. It's Mackenzie Rivers macking on the NBA. That trend he gave 2 weeks ago on nothing, 79%. As they say in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, it's going to be lit. This is the weekend edition of Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. So without further ado, let's go to my man. You hear him every Saturday night with Arnie Spanier, 8 to 11 Pacific, 11 to 2 Eastern, one of the brightest minds covering college hoops. It's Aaron Torres. Aaron, how you doing, buddy?
Bernie, I'm great, man. I appreciate you having me, especially with the fight ending a little bit ahead of schedule. I know that your audience is demanding boxing, but you know I'm a college hoops junkie, so anytime I can talk it, I'm happy to, and I'm obviously happy to join you, my man. I appreciate it.
Well, it was a turbulent day in college basketball, too, Aaron, and folks, we are going to get to the boxing, but listen, we got to do this stuff, too, all right? Before today, Aaron, we talked about this on the phone the other day, in January, when the four seeds were sort of dubbed number one seeds, Gonzaga, San Diego State, Kansas, and Baylor. Before today, they were a cumulative 56-1 in the last 5 weeks. The only loss, Baylor over Kansas. Well, look what happens today. They go 1-3. And I want to dive right in because what I wanted to do tonight, Aaron, I've circled about 15 teams. Now, we're probably not going to get to all of them, but we'll have you on again. And I want to go contender or pretender. And see, here's the bummer. I didn't think San Diego State would lose today.
Can I jump in?
Go ahead.
I can tell you this. San Diego State losing one game since last March does not mean that they're not a contender. And so I don't mean to cut you off. We can go wherever you want. But this idea that they don't play anybody, that they're not good. Listen, teams lose games. This is basketball. This isn't college football where Clemson gets to play Boston College and Georgia Tech every week. This is college basketball. Losses happen. It doesn't change anything to do with San Diego State. But go ahead and continue, Bernie.
Well, that frankly, that's exactly where I was going. Look, these kids are not robots. They're not machines. They're 26-1. You and I talked last November. You thought they were a top five team in the country. And you know what they are? It doesn't change my opinion. We're going to talk about this on where I think they could end up in this tournament. Meaning this. Now, they still might be a number one seed. I don't think the ship sailed on that. And I've always said there's no good such thing as a good loss. It's like a good kidney stone. But if they end up as a number two out west, you might have a better chance that they might face Gonzaga, who also lost today. But I want to start with San Diego State. And what we're going to do is call this contender or pretender. And I want to preface this. Regardless of them losing today doesn't change how I would have felt about them in terms of what they'll do in March. They're vicious defensively. I saw them in person. Now, I was a little concerned about their scoring punch, but that's why I only took the Rebels today because they were laying 14 points. I think they're expensive. And I also saw, Aaron, the 2011 San Diego State team with DJ Gabe, Billy White, Kawhi Leonard. I saw them courtside, too. This team compares favorably to that team. That team got to the Elite Eight and lost to Kemba Walker and UConn. Take me down. Give me your thoughts on San Diego State. Can they be a Final Four team?
To answer your question, yes, 100%. And, you know, listen, the loss today isn't great. But let's not forget, with San Diego State, for people who don't know their resume, and I'm assuming most people don't because, you know, most people aren't paying attention to college basketball until this time of year. But Creighton is now in second place in the Big East. They've won at Seton Hall, at Villanova, at Marquette. This San Diego State team beat them by 30. Okay, Utah in the Pac-12, they go to Vegas, your hometown. They beat Kentucky on a neutral court. Utah then plays San Diego State 2 days later. San Diego State beats them by 30. BYU, you know, I don't know if you saw this, Bernie. BYU upset Gonzaga at home tonight. San Diego State won at BYU. And so what I'll tell your audience is exactly what I told you over the phone this week. I don't know if they're the best team in the country. I do think San Diego State, even though they are from a mid-major conference in the Mountain West, I think they're the most complete team. Listen, I mean, you know, they're top 10 nationally in offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. In a year where we have moved back the three-point line in college basketball and no one can hit threes, their top four guards that play the most minutes all shoot above 37%, 38% from three-point land. They don't turn the ball over. They're the top 10 nationally in fewest turnovers. They hit about 80% or a little under 80% of their foul shots. It's insane. And so to me, you know, the way that I look at them is, listen, can anybody have an off night? And that's what I think tonight largely was. Absolutely. But in terms of actually coming up with a game plan to execute to beat San Diego State when they are at full strength and they're playing at their best, I don't know what it is, because believe it or not, I don't know that this team has a weakness. And so to answer your question, I know I already went long on the first answer, first question, but yes, this team can get to Atlanta, can get to a Final Four, and yes, they can win a national championship.
Well, I'm in agreement they can get to the Final Four. I saw them courtside here in Las Vegas, and I called you. Look, they're spacing. The way they communicate and switch on defense, they don't turn the ball over. Again, they're human. They're not machines. They're not robots. And what happened today doesn't change my opinion. By the way, they also beat Iowa by 10, and they've had a pretty good season in the Big Ten, and they're ranked 21st. I want to jump to Baylor, and I'll tell you why, because I want to give you credit, Aaron. We talked on the phone last November. You're one of the only people that I can remember that had Baylor in your preseason Final Four. They're only 4-2 in games decided by less than 6 points. But could they be a Final Four team? Could they win it all?
They're only 4-2 in games decided by 6 points because they're beating the crap out of everybody, Bernie. That's like saying, you know, Tyson Fury is only, 2-0-1 in fights that go the distance. Yeah, because he knocks everybody out in the third round until tonight, seventh round.
See, that's precisely why I asked it, because if you get down to the last couple minutes of a game where the heat gets hot and it's hard to breathe and they're not used to being there because they are beating the crap out of everybody, does that rear its head in the tournament in a one-and-done, do-or-die style?
You know, I don't. You know, I will say, though, the thing about today, they did lose, obviously, at home to Kansas. One, I thought that was a reflection of Kansas. And I'll say this, man, is like, first of all, you're right. I've been high on Baylor. I had them in the Final Four in the preseason. But I will also say I didn't see them at 24-1 on a 23-game winning streak on February 21st, 22nd, whatever today is. You know, what I would say about Baylor is this. First of all, the guard play you saw today, they're phenomenal. They're not super big, but they rebound really well for a small team. As you just said with San Diego State, the spacing is there. The three-point shooting is there. They defend their you-know-what off. But I also will give credit really quickly to Bill Self in Kansas. I know this is kind of a Baylor segment right now. But, you know, I thought Bill Self, and I've been critical of Bill Self, some of the stuff that's happened off the court over the last year, I thought he put on a coaching masterclass. You know, they kept feeding the ball to Azubuike today, and he is probably the biggest mismatch in college basketball. And then when Baylor realized, oh my goodness, Azubuike only shoots 43% from the foul line, all of a sudden, Kansas was no longer feeding him, kept the ball in Devon Dotson's hands, and Devon Dotson made a bunch of foul shots down the stretch, and they won the game. So to answer your question, Yes, Baylor can absolutely win the national championship. They're 24-2. They've beaten so many phenomenal teams throughout the course of this season. I thought today was more about Kansas elevating their game than it was than any major flaw that I saw from Baylor.
Big time. We're talking with Aaron Torres. You hear him every Saturday night with Arnie Spanier, 8 to 11 Pacific, 11 to 2 Eastern, one of the brightest minds covering college hoops. Let's talk about Kansas because, for my money, they've got the best lethal inside-out combo in point guard Devin Dotson and Udoka Azubuike. They don't have a lot of shooting threats, but for my money, I think, gun to my head, I think Kansas wins it all. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the two things that concern me are very simply this, is that what you said, they don't have great three-point shooting. I'll say this, first of all, to backtrack, Udoka Azubuike, as you said, he is the biggest single mismatch down low. In an era where everybody wants to shoot threes and space the ball, he's an automatic 2 points if he gets the ball within a couple feet from the rim. Devon Dotson was one of these kids that could have gone pro last year, probably would have been drafted, comes back, and he alongside Azubuike are probably 1 and 2 in terms of the Big 12 player of the year this year. But the shooting concerns me, and then the other thing that concerns me is what I just referenced, is Udoka Azubuike shoots 43% from the foul line, and smart teams through the years have started fouling him early and often. And that was kind of my frustration watching that Baylor game today, was I sat back and I said, you know, with 6-7 minutes to go, we're watching these very simple pick and rolls, the most simple play in basketball. He's rolling to the rim. If I'm Baylor, I'm putting in my 12th guy and just saying, grab him whenever he rolls to the rim. And if they throw it to him, you foul him and you make him beat us from the foul line. So, listen, this is college basketball. There are no, you know, Golden State Warriors from a few years ago or Los Angeles Clippers. All these teams have flaws. I think Kansas's flaws are pretty, you know, manageable, but it does worry me that one of their most important players may have to be pulled off the floor in crunch time if teams smartly foul him as things get down to the wire.
He is Aaron Torres. When we come back, I want to talk about teams like Kentucky, Houston, Dayton, Michigan State. Oh, yeah, and some team called Duke. Contender or pretender, don't go anywhere. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit as to how much we'll match. Millions of people a year are getting their cash back matched. Discover Cashback Match. What are you waiting for? Learn more at discover.com/cashback match. Aaron Torres, Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas. We are back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. We continue with my man Aaron Torres, one of the brightest minds in all of college basketball. You hear him every Saturday night with Arnie Spanier, 8 to 11 Pacific, 11 to 2 Eastern. We're doing a little thing called Contender or Pretender. We're not going to get to all of them. We'd need 3 or 4 hours tonight. So we'll just do as many as we can. Aaron, let's pick up with Kentucky. You mentioned them earlier. Look, Kentucky is not one of their vintage teams. They're living on their name. But they've shown an ability to win some close games against good opponents. They took Louisville out and Texas Tech in overtime. Ashton Hagans, dangerous. You still got John Calipari, contender or pretender?
They're certainly a contender. They're a very weird team in the sense that they actually play best in their biggest games this year. So yeah, as you mentioned, neutral court win over Michigan State, road win at Texas Tech, road win at LSU earlier this year, Louisville win at home in overtime. I actually worry about them more as a, say, a 2 seed in a 2-7 matchup where, you know, listen, they lost at South Carolina, that two very close games against Vanderbilt, which is in last place in the SEC. You know, I worry more about them in those middle, you know, those games early in the tournament than I do if they get to a Sweet 16. If they get to a Sweet 16, they're going to be fine. The thing that I love about them, they have great guard play, 3 McDonald's All-Americans. Ashton Hagans wasn't technically a McDonald's All-American, but They have three guards. They make a ton of foul shots. They shoot an absurd percentage at the foul line. They take care of the ball. They don't turn the ball over a ton. I do think Kentucky is a pretender. Weirdly, I worry about them more in, say, the second round if they're a 2 seed in the 2-7, 3-6 type game more than I worry about them if they're playing a big, you know, marquee opponent in the Sweet 16.
What would concern me about them is the fact they struggle to hit three-point shots. And for the first time in recent memory, they don't have a single NBA draft lottery pick on the roster, which in and of itself isn't a big thing, but unusual for Kentucky. Houston. Mm-hmm. Now, look, I love Kelvin Sampson. He's put together a consistent program. They're built to win in March. You've got Quentin Grimes. He's averaging 13 points a game. Houston won 33 games last season, came within 4 points of defeating Kentucky in the Sweet 16. But the game that sticks for me 2 years ago, that buzzer beater by Michigan's Jordan Poole from the parking lot, kept the Cougars out of the Sweet 16. That Michigan team got to the finals. Cougars are very tough to handle inside. They rank third in offensive rebounding. Aaron, I think they're a big-time contender. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you and I were talking kind of off-air, Bernie, earlier this week. And, you know, even though they're in the, obviously, the AAC, they remind me of a Big 12 team in the ilk of Texas Tech, of West Virginia, where they're veteran, they're tough, and if you're just not going to match their physicality, you just have no chance. And so they defend well, they play well. Kelvin Sampson, for whatever issues that he's had kind of, you know, in the past, is just an incredible coach. He has an NBA background now, spent a few years in the NBA with the Milwaukee Bucks. So are they contender to win a national championship? I don't know, but they're going to be in that 4-6 range. I just mentioned Kentucky being a 3 seed. You know, I mean, if they're a 5 seed and they get the right draw, you mean to tell me that that team can't go toe-to-toe with Baylor or Gonzaga? That Gonzaga's a sexy, fun team to watch, but do they really want to mix it up and get physical and get elbowed and get bloody and all that kind of stuff? So I don't know if contender for national championship with Houston, but again, can they make it to Atlanta? Absolutely.
Someone tweeted to me earlier, and I was going to bring this team up anyway, about Dayton. I love Dayton. I love Obi Toppin. He's averaging 20-8, but he's far from a one-man show. I think this Flyers team is stacked with a ton of talent, more than people realize. And what really caught my eye, they did lose to Kansas, but it wasn't overtime. I think Dayton's a contender. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's the thing, right? And so it's funny because I went back and, you know, I kind of did the whole thing on my podcast. You know, I have a podcast called the Aaron Torres Podcast. And, mm-hmm. you know, I talked a lot about them probably about a week ago, 10 days ago. And, you know, what I said was, is they really play four out. Obi Toppin's really the only kind of quote unquote big guy. They got a bunch of shooters, you know, Jalen Crutcher, Mike Soule. They got a bunch of guys that just shoot the, you know, what out of the ball. And I said, you know, it would worry me a team with size, how they would handle, how Dayton would handle them. But you just brought it up, Bernie. They had Kansas dead to rights in the final of the Maui Invitational. Kansas rallies. They end up winning in overtime. But we just talked about Kansas a minute ago. And if you can match the physicality that Kansas brings with Udoka Azubuike, David McCormick off the bench, you can match anybody physically. And so with Dayton, I know they're not the sexiest pick, but they are going to have, and people are going to laugh when I say this, Dayton's going to have the best player in this tournament, the NCAA tournament, with Obi Toppin. I think I'm the only one saying it, so you can mark this down, Bernie, February 22nd. I think he is a contender to be the number one pick in the draft. I don't think he will be. I don't think it's inconceivable, though. He will be the best player in this tournament. He will be the Ja Morant of this tournament in terms of that first round. He's going to open up eyes, and people are going to say, wow, he's way better than I realized. So I do think Dayton is a contender because when you have the best player in the tournament and you shoot the three ball as well as they do, you can play with anybody.
Well, listen, I will mark it down. I love Obi Toppin. And remember, last November, you thought San Diego State would be one of the top five teams in the country. I look up today, they're ranked fourth. And you also said Baylor would be in the Final Four. And I don't think anybody can dispute that. But you said these things back in November. Speaking of physicality, Michigan State, my man Tom Izzo, look, on paper, it feels like the Spartans have a complete team. But they've suffered a lot of losses. But they traditionally peak in March, and Izzo has a way of rallying his team. And on paper, there are actually very few teams that Izzo's had that is better than this one in the last 25 years. Could they rally late? I think Michigan State's always a contender.
Listen, Bernie, this show is called Straight Out of Vegas, and, you know, there's winners and losers in Vegas. Let's just say your boy AT, Aaron Torres, the guy you're talking to right now, you know, there's been a lot of crumpled up tickets on the floor with Michigan State. And, you know, I've kind of taken that edict with me all year of they have Cassius Winston, preseason National Player of the Year. They made the Final Four last year. They have Tom Izzo. They're going to turn it around. And they just really, frankly, haven't. And I know they just won at Nebraska the other day. But even when they played, when they won at Illinois a few days ago, probably about 10 days ago now, I did an interview the next day. I said, oh, well, this means that Michigan State turned around. I said, listen, they were up 20 and completely blew the lead. I am going to say pretender, Bernie, because
okay.
I just have, you know, we're 27 games into the regular season at this point. You know, it's not mid-January. It's not late January. You don't have time to figure it out. This is when you need to be peaking. Michigan State already has more losses this year than they did last year during the Final Four run. Maybe Tom Izzo once again proves me wrong over the next month, but I got to say pretender right now. And again, it's because of all the crumbled up tickets I'm looking at, from throughout the season when I was a believer and they proved me wrong.
Well, no, that's undeniable. They've lost games at home. Look, clearly Michigan State is underachieved. What will be interesting is how that dynamic plays out when March Madness starts, because they're not looked at as formidable as they used to be, but they're always going to be a tough out. Now, speaking of teams with crumpled up tickets, Duke is not exactly a cover machine, but as usual, and as usual, they're one of the youngest teams in the nation. That's translated to a lot of inconsistency this year. This may sound like an oxymoron. I think Duke has enough talent to not only get to the Final Four, but to win it. But I'm going to bet against them because you're going to pay an incredible premium. Duke will continue to be expensive. It's my long-winded way of saying bet against Duke with the spread, but don't be surprised if they're back in the Final Four.
No, I agree 100%. And you look at on paper this team and the talent on this team does not even come close to matching up with not only last year, but I mean, there's been a few years here. They had Jason Tatum, don't forget, in 2017. They didn't get out of the first weekend of the tournament with Jason Tatum. And so, you know, but I think what's different is the pieces this year fit. Last year they had three wings that all kind of did the same thing. This year the pieces fit. It's Trey Jones's team, a little bit like Kansas. Everything goes through Trey Jones and Vernon Carey, the big guy down low. His dad played in the NFL for 15 years. I think they're a pretender. I'm with you, Bernie. You would know the odds better than me in terms of what you're going to have to pay in terms of not only individual point spreads, but also taking a future on them. Can they win it? Yeah. But is there better value on the board? I would absolutely think so. But yes, Duke is good enough to win it all.
Only got about 30 seconds, Aaron, but we can't terminate this segment without talking about Gonzaga, because of the tournament, because of the conference they're in, tough to lay a number. Be curious to see how they do when they get into better competition. Again, what happened to BYU today doesn't change my mind. Contender or pretender?
I know we're on a short time frame. One, I would say contender. Two, I would say, listen, this is a three-bid conference. Guess how many bids the ACC is going to get this year? Maybe four, probably.
Right.
You know, it's not as big of a gap as it normally is. My concern with Gonzaga, Killian Tilly is a big guy. He's a stretch five. He completely changes the dynamic of this team, and he just can't stay healthy. And so right now for me to bet on them would mean for me to believe that he is going to be healthy for six straight games for three straight weeks in March. Yes, they can win it. But when their most important player is a very injury-prone player, and I hate to say it, that does worry me. Yes, Gonzaga can win it, but I do have worries about them going into March.
Aaron, can't thank you enough. We got to do this again. He's Aaron Torres. You catch him every Saturday night with Arnie Spanier, 8 to 11 Pacific, 11 to 2 Eastern. And don't forget his podcast as well. Follow him on Twitter. Give your Twitter handle, Aaron.
Yeah, it's Aaron_Torres. By the way, I hate to brag, but I give out picks on my Instagram page, Aaron_Torres_sports_podcast. Picks went 5-1 today. No big deal. Hate to brag. Not my style. So
it ain't as Reggie Jackson once said, it ain't bragging if you did it, right?
Yeah.
All right, Aaron. Thanks a lot, buddy. We're going to talk soon. We'll have you on again soon. Good stuff. Hey, by the way, there was a little fight in Las Vegas tonight. And we're going to talk about it in just a sec with my man T.C. Martin, who is ringside. But first, Well, let's go to my man, Kevin Figures, who always mollywops the competition.
I wish I could mollywop the competition the way Tyson Fury did tonight in that little fight you were just talking about, Bernie. We do have a new heavyweight champion of the world, and he curb-stomped Deontay Wilder. The defending champ's corner threw in the towel early in the seventh round. Wilder, bleeding from the ear, was clearly disoriented in the sixth. Fury knocked him down in both the third and fifth round. Tyson Fury wins the WBC heavyweight title and improves to 30-0-1 while handing Deontay Wilder his first professional loss. In college hoops, you had third-ranked San Diego State suffering their first loss of the season to the hands of UNLV. Number 2 Gonzaga dominated by number 23 BYU 91-78. Third-ranked Kansas beat top-ranked Baylor 64-61. In the NBA, you had the Bucks getting 31 points from Giannis Antetokounmpo in a blowout victory over the 76ers. Houston got 38 points from James Harden and 34 from Russell Westbrook in a 10-point win over Utah. Also news from the Golden State Warriors, their guard Steph Curry cleared for full contact. He expects to be back in the lineup for March 1st. He has been out since October with a broken hand. And news out of college football, the University of Colorado hiring Miami Dolphins receivers coach Carl Durrell as their new head coach. He was an assistant in Colorado and former head coach at UCLA. Back to straight out of Vegas.
Thanks so much, Kevin. I'm Bernie Fratto. Come to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. What does it mean when Geico says just 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance? It means you probably should have gone to Geico.com 15 minutes ago. Let's head back to Vegas. I'm in Vegas, but this gentleman was ringside tonight for the fight. My man, T.C. Martin. T.C., before I ask any question, I just got to know, will Deontay Wilder invoke the 30-day first right of refusal clause, and will we have a third Wilder fight?
Yeah, I was talking to Bob Arum earlier this week on my show, and what Bob said is the rematch clause will go into effect like this. The winner of the fight will get 60% of the gate. The loser will get 40% if both guys agree to have a third fight. So, again, Deontay Wilder, the way everything went down tonight, I think he's going to need some time to think things over, get healed up here, but automatically, he wants to get back in the ring. He wants another shot at Fury. But I think the big question here, Bernie, is especially here tonight at the MGM Grand, do people really want to see a third fight between these guys? Because, a lot of people thought that Tyson Fury won the first fight, and he definitely won the fight tonight and dominated in all facets.
Well, there's no question. He took it to him early. I want to talk about that. Look, when you get a sequel between two heavyweights and contrasting styles, anything can happen, as we've seen in the past. The reason I asked about the contract invoking the 30-day first right of refusal clause, is it true that Wilder said some cryptic things after the fight? He was, quote, dealing with something. Did you hear about that, T.C.?
I'm sorry, Bernie. It's still a little noisy in here. Can you repeat that one more time?
Yeah, apparently Wilder said some cryptic things after the fight having to do with, he was, quote, dealing with something. Did you happen to hear anything of that nature?
Well, I talked to the executive director of the Nevada State Athletic Commission after the fight, and he was dealing with things during the course of the fight. He had a broken jaw, and they say a broken eardrum that happened early in the fight. So he may be referring to that. If it's anything, prior to leading up to the fight, I don't know anything about that. But we know that he was hurt badly. His corner basically told him, heading into round number 7, you've got to show something. Therefore, when he didn't show anything, they threw him the towel. So it wasn't a surprise to those around ringside, people that were privy to his corner and the athletic commission that this could happen.
TC, 74% of the money was on Wilder tonight. People thought because Fury came in weighing 273, he would not faint and move and slip as well. Quite the opposite. My understanding, he was training at 265 for the last couple of months. What did you see in Fury in the first two rounds that made it so clear that this was going to be his night?
Well, Fury, he called his shot. He said that he was going to come out and attack. A lot of people thought that he was going to, box, and I thought that he was going to come out and box and win rounds because, against Deontay Wilder, we've seen Deontay Wilder, basically be a one-punch guy, and we saw that against Luis Ortiz in December where Ortiz basically won every round prior to that. So, the consensus was that Fury was going to put some early rounds in the bank, but I don't think anybody saw us really him hurting Wilder. But again, Bernie, the money went on Wilder foolishly because people love the one punch. It wasn't a lot of sharp money that went on this. This is a lot of public money because, you know, the public loves the big punchers here. And it's hard to back a guy that is, you know, going to hold back and try to, you know, a pot shot a guy and load up. So, you know, Fury came out and said exactly what he was going to do because I'm going to outbox him. He goes, I'm going to shove him around. I'm going to bully the bully. And he goes, I'm going to knock him out. And check the boxes on all three of those things. That's exactly what he did tonight. And the weight gain, you know, when you're a heavyweight like this, really, you know, didn't really come into play. I don't think that was a big deal at all because he still had his movement. He was jabbing. He was slipping. The guy just has superior boxing skills.
Yes.
And again, I just think that, you know, the weight was not a factor at all. But if you, you know, you look at the fight, I mean, Fury looked like a giant in there compared to Wilder. So for the first time in his career, Wilder really looked the much smaller man, even though, remember, Wilder put on 15 pounds from the last fight.
He did. We're talking with T.C. Martin, host of the T.C. Martin Show here in Las Vegas, daily from 2 to 3 p.m. on 1400 a.m. T.C., you've gotten to know Tyson Fury pretty well. And you've interviewed him many times. Do you get the sense that tonight Fury was seeking a form of redemption and wanted to win this fight based on not only some of his personal travails, but also the fact that he felt he won the first fight?
Absolutely correct, Bernie. Absolutely. And again, you know, Tyson Fury is a guy who is getting better and better. And not a lot of people were believing him with that, you know. And he took a lot of flack for his tune-up fights that he had here in Vegas in June and September against Tom Schwartz, where he knocked him out in the second round, and he had that aggressive approach. He had the aggressive approach against Otto Wallin in September as well, too. But, you know, Wallin opened up a cut. Fury, you know, came back, withstood the cut, and closed the show very, very nicely. But, again, a lot of people thought that, okay, you know, Fury is not going to be able to hold up to the big punching power of Deontay Wilder. And then going back to that fight that they had, you know, in December of 2018, when Fury, you know, went down twice, and, you know, a lot of people thought, hey, he was lucky to get up. But I think that Tyson Fury showed us that he's resilient. He's a man that comes into boxing matches with nothing to lose because of some of the, you know, personal stuff that you had mentioned, you know, fighting, you know, the drug addiction, ballooning up to 400 pounds, suicidal thoughts, all that stuff. And he is a man that just comes in with nothing to lose. And he figured, you know what, I'm going to lay it all on the line. And this is what he's been doing. He said he was the best shape of his career, and he was. He trained hard here in Las Vegas for 8 weeks. And Tyson Fury came through with everything that he predicted.
We're wrapping it up with T.C. Martin, host of the T.C. Martin Show here in Las Vegas, daily 2 to 3 p.m. on 1400 a.m. He was ringside tonight for the Fury-Wilder fight. You said something a few minutes ago, T.C., I want to double back on. Do people want to see a rematch? Now, I know that, look, first of all, in society, gladiator sports have been fascinated, have been a fascination of society for 6,000 years. So I think people will watch. And I know it's an overused cliche, but this, you know, the styles make fights cliche. This, to me, was the pinnacle of that because it was Wilder's power versus Fury's technical skill, et cetera. The question I have for you, I do believe there'll be another fight. I do believe people will watch it. What does Deontay Wilder have to do, in your view, to make the next fight more competitive and even win?
I think he actually, you know, has to be humble, which he was at the end of the fight. He said that Fury was the better man tonight, but he's got to go to the drawing board and he's got to be more active. He just cannot rely on being a one punch fighter. And that was the thing that we had talked about leading up to this fight is that, you know, he needs to make adjustments. And we've seen this from Wilder in the past that, you know, he has beaten people with his power, but there's not a whole lot of substance with him. He needs to be more active. He has to have more to his arsenal. He needs more in his toolbox. And that's what Tyson Fury has done over the course of the last couple of years. He's added the footwork. Mm-hmm. He's added the speed. He's added the feinting. And Deontay Wilder just, again, he looked disinterested tonight, Bernie. And when Fury connected with him in those first two rounds, you could see at that point in time, Wilder was exhausted. And I'll use the term again, disinterested. So he's going to have to tell people, hey, I'm going to go back and I'm going to improve. I'm going to change my style. I'm going to learn to be a more active puncher. He has to be more active. If he's not, then we're going to see the same type of result. And let's be honest. I mean, going back to that December fight against Ortiz, where he basically lost, you know, five of the six rounds, or you could say he lost all the six rounds, but
right.
he landed the haymaker against an inferior fighter that has a weak chin. And if whoever Deontay Wilder fights, he has to have a better game plan than what he came with tonight.
Good stuff, TC. And that's exactly why they call it the sweet science, and the sport is called boxing, not punching. He's TC Martin, host of the TC Martin Show daily here in Las Vegas, 2 to 3 p.m. on 1400. Thanks, TC.
Thanks, Bernie. Appreciate it.
All right, coming up, you know him, you love him, you can't live without him. It's Mackenzie Rivers on Mackin' on the NBA. If you heard 2 weeks ago and followed his advice, you've been cashing tickets. He's got some more stuff for you after this break as well. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit to how much we'll match. Millions of people a year are getting their cash back matched. Discover Cash Back Match. What are you waiting for? Learn more at discover.com/cashbackmatch. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio Studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted. So don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
We are back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio Studios. And before we go any further, I want to thank my broadcast team back in Los Angeles. That would be Eric Roberts, Chris Perfett, and Kevin Figures. Thanks a lot, guys. Doing a great job. Could not do this show without you. All right, you know him, you love him, you can't live without him. We debuted this segment 2 weeks ago to great fanfare. It's called Mackin' on the NBA. And just so you remember, 2 weeks ago tonight, Mackenzie Rivers discovered a trend in the NBA that road favorites had been cashing in an alarmingly successful margin. They were, you know, way over 500. And since we broke the news, or not, well, Mackenzie deserves the credit. He's the one that did the research. Since February 8th, what have road favorites gone, Mackenzie?
13-3-1.
81%. And you took it a step further. Road favorites between 5 and 10 points laying on the road?
83% and 80% the last 4 weeks. So it was hot 2 weeks ago. 4 weeks now, it's been incredibly hot.
All right, so let's continue this. Tonight's segment on Mackin' and the NBA has to do with your thoughts on possibly, I say this with a question mark, the next best player in the world?
That's right. The Clippers, they got shocked today. They lost to the Kings. You know, Kawhi in February, he's frustrated. I understand. I don't want to talk about Kawhi tonight. I'll save that for June. Hopefully you're kind enough to have me back on for the playoffs. But I want to talk about the next best player in the world. And I think there's only three names that it could be. I think it could be Giannis. Many people think he's the best right now. That's fair. I mean, his PER is number one ever right now, his player efficiency rating. Or maybe it could be Luka, 30-point triple-double, but there's one more name, and I'd say if there's one name in the NBA that matters right now, it's this individual. Do you know who it is?
You're not going to say Zion Williamson.
He's 19 years old, and he's putting up numbers that nobody's seen before since Shaquille O'Neal. The only rookie ever to score 20 points a game and shoot 55% is Shaq, except he's 6'4", and he's the quickest center you've ever seen.
Well, I saw him in the NBA Summer League for a short minute, and he looked very dominant, and he's got incredible fast-twitch muscles. But now he's doing it in real NBA games against real grown men. So the question is, how can the folks listening take this information and parlay it, for lack of a better term, see what I did there,
and
take it to the window and cash them tickets?
Well, I'm waiting for these odds to come out because the bookmakers have taken them off since the All-Star break. Teams to make the playoffs. The Pelicans' odds have surged. They had the toughest schedule before the All-Star break, and they have one of the easier schedules down the stretch. Right now, they're a couple games out, but I can't wait for that line to come out. I'm going to fire on the Pelicans to make the playoffs.
All right, now the Pelicans have a game coming up at Golden State, and they're a prohibitive favorite. Take us down that road.
And this is a road favorite between 5 and 10 points. So that's 80% the last 4 weeks. I'm going right back to it. There's nobody like this guy. It's going to be Warriors fans are going to come to the arena, to Chase Center, to see this guy. Not Steph, not Clay, not Andrew Wiggins. They're going to come to see Zion. I think that electricity is going to be in the building. Fez cashed his over Zion 23 points. I'm going back to the well. I'm going to bet Zion over points, and I'm going to bet the Pelicans to cover that 8.
Well, you know what? And it plays right into our earlier narrative. You've got a road favorite here,
right?
And you've got a road favorite between 5 and 10. And just to reiterate, road favorites 40 and 21, 64% this year. Road favorites between 5 and 10, 16 and 4 since February 8th. Road favorites 13 and 3, 81%. Road favorites laying more than 5 points and less than 10, 83%. So you've got the New Orleans Pelicans at 8, Golden State. Thanks a lot, McKenzie. And by the way, after
you
did this segment last week, I noticed the next day the Clippers were laying 6.
How'd that do?
They went by about a million. That's what you call a rocking chair game. All right, yep. I got a quick college game I think you all folks should get on tomorrow. Creighton laying 5.5 over Butler. I think they win by double digits. As they used to say in the Jeffersons, Creighton is moving on up, man. They've cashed 7 of their last 8 outings. And, oh, by the way, they dominate against the number in Omaha, going 6-0 against the spread in their last 6 games versus, yes, Butler. And they also owe Butler, the Bulldogs, for a 14-point thrashing that they just, you know, suffered at Hinkle Fieldhouse in January. So let's go with Creighton, minus 5.5 tomorrow at Butler. No, they're home against Butler. Sorry about that. All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Straight Outta Vegas. Thanks to Aaron Torres. Thanks to T.C. Martin. Up next, well, you got the man. He brings it strong from Nashville. Guy by the name of Jason Martin. It is time for the Jason Martin Show. Keep it locked.
Straight Outta Vegas!